Pick a theme and work it to exhaustion. The subject must be something you truly love or hate. Dorothea Lange.
Welcome to Through My Lens with Clay Daly and special guest Daniel Alvarez.
We're back to Through My Lens with Clay Daly and Daniel Alvarez.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? This is actually a follow-up, a part two, a part two. I don't know, how do we say it?
Yeah.
Of episode 11 when you were on. That was February, I believe it was released February the 20th.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so February 20th, 2019 for all of you people listening in 2020, it was February 20th of 2019. And I, on my end, had a lot of people responding to the episode. Mm-hmm. You as well, on your end.
Yeah, I had a lot of people tell me that they really enjoyed it. And you know, I sent a handful of people your way, and I got a lot of compliments. One in particular was a buddy of mine, Alex, who lives down in Riverside here in California. Mm-hmm. He kind of gave me like a backhanded compliment about it, where he was like, "Oh man, you actually sound like you know what you're talking about. You were very articulate." And I was like, "Thanks, I think, you know." But, so there's a lot of people really enjoyed it, and so I was happy. I was happy to hear that.
Yeah, same here. Listeners, if you haven't heard that episode, go back and listen to that one. You could definitely listen to this one, because you don't have to listen to that one first, but you could, you know. You could definitely go back to listen to that one. But there were a few people who asked you some questions pertaining some things that we didn't cover in that episode, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that during our sort of back and forth, you asked me if I had a list of questions, you know, that I used to read from. Mm-hmm. To do these to do the discussions, and I didn't. And there was one question actually that I did have on my little tiny bullet list of questions, and that question, I think we well, let's explore that question for a second. So
okay,
what makes a good photograph to you?
Obviously, there's the technical aspects of the photo, right? Was it, you know, is it, you know, composed well? Is there, you know, the technical aspects of using a camera, right? Are they there?
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, for me, I'm always drawn to photos that tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
They give me some sort of narrative. But I don't like to be told everything, right? Because mm-hmm. then it's the photo's not going to be engaging.
Right.
So I like a photo that tells me something, but sort of leaves some questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kind of things that I like. I'm drawn to photos that have some sort of interesting lighting or some sort of interesting composition. Right, maybe a juxtaposition or something like that. Those sort of things are things that I look for when I'm looking at, like, let's say Instagram, and I'm scrolling through people's photos. You know, I'm looking for something along those lines, something that's going to capture me, right? Because we're kind of living in an age where we're inundated with photos.
Mm-hmm.
We have photos coming at us from everywhere, so it's got to be something that's going to engage you and interest you long enough to really sit there and spend some time with the photo.
When you're going through Instagram, you're actually looking at people you follow, or do you go to the explore tab and go through there as well?
Yeah, I do both. And you know, if it's something that, if it's from someone that I'm not following, you know, then I'll go into their feed and I'll look at some of their other stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I like what I'm seeing, then I'll follow them.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of watch their feed and look at their work as they, you know, bring in, bring in stuff. I did the same thing when I had a Tumblr account. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go through Tumblr and I would look at photos and look at things that would kind of inspire me or, you know, whatever. Same thing with Flickr or what have you.
Using Instagram, I know that back in the Flickr days, there were a lot of collaborations with people who were part of the all the different groups. Mm-hmm. Did you ever do that in the Flickr days?
Are you talking about like the photo collectives?
Yeah, the collectives, right.
No, I never really got into that. Mm-hmm. I would look at their work and kind of see what they were doing. But for me to like try and join one, I never really did anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Same now with Instagram, I take it then.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Photography, I think, is, you know, we kind of touched on it a little bit the last time we talked about it. It's kind of a solitary thing that people kind of do alone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is fine. And I enjoy going out and shooting with other people and, you know, go on photo walks or things like that. But when I'm serious or I'm really in the zone, or it's usually when I'm by myself. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause right. I'm not engaging with another person in conversation. I got my head on a swivel. I'm looking for somewhere to make a photo. Right. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it just kind of depends. Like I said, in reality, it's sort of something that we do by ourselves. Right.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of the people who you know, some of your friends, basically. Mm-hmm. Are any of those people you found through Instagram? You know, last episode, we sort of touched on some people who you're friends with who are also photographers, correct?
Yeah.
Are those people who you met through Instagram, or are there people you met, in real life who are also on Instagram?
It's a combination of both. I've met a lot of people in person, you know, just going to different events and shooting photos at different things, or going and, you know, somebody will post, oh, we're doing a photo walk, and, you know, I'll go and join in and kind of meet new people. Because I'm not a hermit either. You know, I like going and meeting new people and socializing. I think you and I kind of talked about it, briefly, last week, about people focusing on the wrong stuff, right? Like, yeah, we talked about the focusing on the gear, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing, I think that people focus a little too much on the social media stuff too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've met a lot of people through Instagram, but a lot of the people that I've gravitated to, that I appreciate their work, are people that I know in real life, okay, not just on social media. And some of the people don't even... they're not even active on social media, and you know, those people are some of the best photographers that I know, but you know you probably wouldn't have ever heard of them because they're not active on social media. Unless you're going to galleries and doing that sort of stuff, then you might have heard of people that way, you know what I mean?
Are there any whose websites that you know know off the top of your head?
Ben Molina is a great photographer. He's on Instagram. He's here from the Bay Area as well. He's very prolific. He's out there all the time shooting in different cities and going around and going to different events and shooting everything, really.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody I really admire. I really admire his work as far as the street photography type stuff goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should that actually he'd be a really good person to try and get on the podcast if you can get a hold of him.
he's a very booked man.
Yeah. there's a lot of people, you know. I don't know if you've ever heard of Joe Aguirre. He was here from the Bay Area. He's going to New York now. Richard Brown. There's a lot of people out there as far as the street photography stuff goes. I mean, if you want to talk about the photojournalism stuff, there's tons of people out there,
right,
who do amazing work. That I follow as well, so.
Mm-hmm. Let's sort of delve into your process.
Okay.
Into you know, the way, because you're working on projects. How do you, first of all, decide how to, you know, how to start with a project? Like, you know, what makes you decide this is going to be a project? And do you have a sort of end goal, or is it open-ended? You know, what is your process?
So I think I had mentioned before that for a long time, I was just kind of like, I would just go out and spend the day shooting, you know, street photography or whatever. And, you know, I'd try and focus on getting one good image or getting, you know, one image per roll or something like that, right, that I could show or share. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of started gravitating to more, doing more of a project or more of a series of photos as opposed to just the one photo, right?
Right.
So that kind of came about because I wasn't really seeing any consistency in what I was doing. It was just sort of all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be able to have a body of work that was consistent and it made sense, and you could see it and say, yeah, that looks like something that you would shoot, or something along the lines of what Daniel would make. So I started gravitating towards doing more stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I just started looking around and researching things that interested me, and then trying to get access to people who were involved in those things, or get into contact with people that were somehow associated to whatever was it was interesting me. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. I've posted a handful of photos on my Instagram feed of one of my cousins, Adrian, and his son, Adrian Jr. Mm-hmm.
The rodeos?
Yeah, the rodeo stuff. Mm-hmm. My cousin Adrian, he's a single father, right? Mm. And he's very, very proud of his son and everything that his son does. And he's really good at bull riding, right? So he's getting really popular with that. And I've gone out with them several times to different events. And, you know, I enjoy going to the rodeo just for myself. But, you know, seeing their relationship and the way they interact at the rodeo is to me is completely different than how they normally are. Right. Mm. Because my cousin Adrian really wants to see his son do well. Adrian Jr. obviously he wants to do very well himself, but it's not to the point where he's like one of those sideline dads, right? Where he's like screaming at his kid, you know, you got to do better, whatever, you know, like you see the mm-hmm. YouTube videos where parents are like fighting on the sidelines when their kids are playing, right?
Yes.
So the relationship between them, right, is really interesting to me. Right. And so I told him, you know, I'd love to come and hang out with you guys more and, you know, spend more time with you and maybe shoot some more photos. You know, my cousin Adrian's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And, you know, mm-hmm. so it's just finding something that you're interested in and then getting the access, right?
Right.
But along with that, you know, you don't want to, you want to be genuine, right? You want to be genuine in the things that you're interested in. Because if people feel like you're going to be exploiting them or exploiting their position or whatever the case may be, you're not going to get the access to the topic that you're trying to photograph, right?
Right.
Because if I told my cousin Adrian, yeah, I want to make these photos of you guys and then maybe sell them and, you know, make all this money, and he's going to be like, well, why would I let you, you know, do that to me and my son, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, it's people, if you study human behavior, cognitive human behavior at all, you can tell when people are going to realize that you're just using them, right?
Right.
It has a lot to do with the same. Like if I were to go into downtown and photograph a protest, if I'm there shooting photos of the protest and I'm trying to talk to people or whatever, if they feel like I'm just there to be exploiting the situation, nobody's going to want to talk to me. They're not going to open up and tell me what it is what's going on. So you have to be genuine when you're talking to people, and you have to be upfront too. You know, this is what I want to do, and I want to do. I wanted I want to be a part of whatever it is that's going on that you're trying to photograph.
Yeah. That's funny, because that is, like I said last week or last time we spoke, that is a big hurdle to get over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fear of actually telling people exactly what it is you intend to do, because, well, rejection is a thing. They could shut, mm-hmm. Shut you down.
Right. But I mean, what's the worst they're going to say? They're going to say no. Right.
Right.
And that's fine. They don't want to be a part of it. That's okay. So, there's a lot of times that I've reached out to people and I've wanted to do projects on certain topics. And the people that I've talked to, they're like, no, we really don't want, to be a part of that. And that's okay. They have, mm-hmm. they have that option. And even in situations where I did begin a project and then let's say like halfway through, they change their mind and they say, we don't really want to do this anymore. Then that's okay as well. Right. I'm okay with them telling me I don't want to do this anymore. And then I just stop and I'll move on to, another project. A perfect example of that, it was when, Gina, my wife, was pregnant. Mm-hmm. I told her when we found out that she was pregnant, I told her I want to do a series of photos of you going through the pregnancy. And she's like, okay, sounds good. You do your thing. But she was okay with it. So I started taking photos. I used my Leica and I used Tri-X and I made a bunch of photos. And then the day that she went into labor, she told me that she didn't want me to shoot photos in the delivery room.
In the delivery room, yeah.
Right. Which was like, I was crushed, right? Because I was like, this is the pinnacle. This is going to be the end of this project, right? Because right. it'd been 9 months of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she said, I don't want you to shoot the photos in the delivery room. And I respected that. I didn't shoot any photos in the delivery room, so it stuff like that happens, but you have to be genuine and you need to be honest with people. And if somebody, you're working on a project and they come to you and they say, I don't want XYZ, then you need to respect it and respect their wishes.
Yeah. When you're working on a project, do you have multiple going at the same time, or is it a solo endeavor, like one at a time?
Yeah, I've had multiple projects that I've worked on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, I've been doing one of the first year of my son's life, and that's that's going to come to an end here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing that. I've been doing that project. I'm doing this rodeo thing with my cousin. What else am I working on right now? I think those are as of right now, those are the only two that I've been working on. But I've done other projects that I've done like two or three at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I don't know. I guess that's just in my nature. I'm not like somebody that will just take like a day off. I'm so used to like going 24/7. Yeah. With everything in life, right?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
just photography. So I feel like if I just focused on one thing at a time, I would get burnt out on just that one thing.
That one thing, yeah.
So
what is the end goal for your son's first year? What are you hoping to do at the end with the images you created?
So I'm gonna put a little book together, I don't want to call it a zine because it'll be a little bit more than that. That's the end goal. And then I've also been doing like some video stuff, with that the GoPro that I got. So
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna put together a little video of just these clips that I've shot from this first year of his life. And then I'll just I'll make the book and then I'll make the video, and then I'll when he's old enough, I'll be able to give that to him, and hopefully he'll appreciate it or not critique me too hard if he gets into photography.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I mean, oh, you know what? I did forget to mention the other project I've been doing was, you know, from the sideline stuff that I've been doing. So
oh yes,
I'll probably put a little something together with that stuff.
How long have you been doing that, by the way?
I started that in the winter of 2017.
Okay. And any other projects that you did end, and any projects prior to the ones you just mentioned that actually had a bookend?
Everything else has just sort of been stuff that I've been working on. So I haven't finished anything mm-hmm. yet, other than, you know, the birth of my son one. That's really the only one that I finished. Everything else is just sort of sitting there and I'm working on them. So, mm-hmm. you know, my dad and my mom, divorced when I was about 10 years old. Mm. And so I've been kind of doing photos of my dad and my mom, separately. Mm-hmm. But just as a project for myself, mm-hmm. Just so that I can, it's like my way of dealing with, growing up, you know, with divorced parents, and just sort of mirroring or not mirroring, but, just looking at the photos as a self-reflection, and looking at them, you know, now that I'm an adult and I'm a father, you know, looking at them not only as my mom and my dad, but now looking at them as, you know, adult individuals. Yeah. And so that's kind of something that I've been working on, but I don't really see an end to that either. So that's just, you know, when I say I went from like one photo, you know, for Instagram or for the website or whatever to long-term projects, I really went like the deep end on the long-term projects. Cause I don't really see an end on any of the stuff that I'm working on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that would be where a good editor, if you had somebody who edits photos or knows how to put the photos together in a way that they make sense in a series, you know, that would be where you have somebody come in and help you out and mm-hmm. say, no, I think you're done and this looks good, you know.
Will you be doing that? You getting someone to help look at the stuff?
Yeah, you know, I do know a couple of people who are very good at editing photos. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, I can always reach out to them and tell them, hey, look, you know, this is what I have. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Do you think I have enough here to put, you know, a little book together or a little, you know, am I done with this at this point or something like that?
Yeah.
Ben, like I said, Ben Molina is one of those guys. He is very good at editing photos. The other person I kind of mentioned, I was kind of thinking about him when I mentioned like people not being on social media is Emilio Banuelos, who is from San Jose. He doesn't have Instagram. He has or had a website. I don't even know if that website is active anymore. And he's on Facebook, but he's like he never posts anything, right? But mm-hmm. like I said, he's probably one of the best photographers that I know, and he's very good at editing photos and putting them together. So, you know, it'd probably be something to look into or something to talk about with somebody.
Yeah. Emilio Banuelos, Banuelos is Banuelos.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. Yeah. He has a website, but it's 2016 up. It looks like last post, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, amazing work and really good at putting together a series of photos. But, you know, going back to the, you know, people focusing on the wrong stuff, it's like, yeah. It's tough for anybody to know about him unless you've gone to a gallery show where he's had photos, or you went to, you know, the San Jose Museum where he worked at, or, you know, the Art Institute in San Francisco where he worked at, mm-hmm. you know, so he's known, but he's not known on
and social media. Yeah.
So.
Mm. Do you think that social media is important for our generation? I mean, I know those people you mentioned are not on there, but it seems that is the currency, right? To get your work out there, it's kind of like you have to
yeah.
play the game a little bit What do you think?
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with social media. On the one hand, it's a good thing because you get to see other people's work and you get to explore different things. But, you know, like we talked about, I think people focus too much on it. Mm-hmm. To the point where you're more worried about how many likes you're getting or how many followers you have,
right?
As opposed to the quality or the content of the photos that you're showing. That has a lot to do with my own personal issues with social media. I would much rather be out practicing the craft, right, of taking photos than be on Instagram and engaging with people and trying to get, you know, oh man, I only have X amount of followers, like how do I get to blah blah blah, right?
Right.
You know, and you and I both know that it's a numbers game on social media. That's all it really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will pop up and start following you and you're like, oh okay, I got a new follower or whatever, and then like a week later they're gone.
Right.
You know, it's like they're trying to attract people to come follow them.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much that they appreciate your photos.
Yeah, because they don't even like anything. They just right. follow and then unfollow, which is so right. funny.
Yeah, and to me that's silly. But you know, like you said, it's part of the game now. It's like everybody's on Instagram, everybody's got a Tumblr or had a Tumblr, or you know, you're on Facebook or Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. It's rather odd. Speaking of social media, if you're working on projects and your style becomes a certain way, are you scared of ever sort of typecasting yourself?
No, but I think that's probably why I like to do so many different things in photography.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I mentioned, I feel like if I only work on one project, I'm going to get bored with yeah. it, or I'm going to get burnt out on it, and I'm not going to want to finish. The same goes for the different style of stuff that I do. That's why I like to do different things, or I like to experiment and try different things, because I feel like it's going to make me a more well-rounded photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really, I mean, I used to share stuff a lot, like all the time on Instagram. I used to, like, I was trying to share something at least once a day. And now I don't really do that. Now I sit on the photos a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I don't develop my film right away. Like I have a bag in my refrigerator right now full of film that needs to be developed that I haven't developed yet. And to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you what's on them or when I shot them. So I sit on stuff a little bit longer. I kind of marinate, you know, and then I'll go and look at them. I'll develop the film. I'll look at the photos, and then I can see them from a different perspective that way. And mm-hmm. I can be a little bit more critical of the photo and say, yeah, this is a good photo because of XYZ, or no, this one didn't kind of work. This one didn't really work out, you know?
Right.
But I'm already my toughest critic. There's nothing that anybody's going to say to me about any of my work that I haven't already thought of. So,
right.
You know, for me, that's kind of why I don't share as much as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to focus more on the quality rather than the quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And I experiment, right? So I have different cameras so that I can not get bored and try new things and experiment and see what happens, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have my I have a Yashica 124G. I have a Holga. I have the Polaroid cameras that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pinhole camera. It's all, you know, like I said, it's all for experimenting and trying new things. And maybe, you know, who knows? I'll use the Holga for a whole project on its own, where the focus is like, oh, I did this on a Holga, and this is what I developed. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I actually have a Holga that I need to reload.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
The one that I have is bright pink.
Ooh.
So hey. Whenever I take that one, whenever I take it out, I always get a lot of different people that come up to me and they're like, "What is that?" And you know, then I kind of have to explain to them. But you know, like you know, it's just gear. It's just another thing to help me be creative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked, you know, we mentioned that before. It's just a tool. You know, I don't have any particular fondness of any of my cameras. Like if I needed to, or if I was like, let's say I need some extra cash, right? I'll sell one of them. It's not that big of a deal to me. So, you know, it's just equipment.
Yeah. This is 2018, April 2018. You're not vegan, right?
I'm not, no.
Okay. So in 2018 of April 9th, you were at a fur protest.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, yeah. How are you able to tell a story of someone who doesn't have the same point of view as you? What sort of mental process do you go through? Like, you know, is there a sort of empathy that you have?
So, as far as that one, I was on my way to San Francisco to go. I think I had mentioned to you before that I have two friends that have a camera store in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like the last film camera store in San Francisco. It's called Glass Key. It's Matt and Gordon. They're awesome. If you or any of your listeners come to San Francisco, mm-hmm. you got to visit their shop. They're really good.
That's awesome,
really
good
guys. And all of my camera, just to give you an example about how much I don't really care about camera equipment. The majority of my camera equipment, with the exception of two lenses, is all used. Mm-hmm. And with the exception of one camera that I own, I've bought all of them from them at Glass Key in San Francisco. So yeah, like I said, you got to go visit them if you come out here. But anyway, back to your question. So I was going out to San Francisco. I happened to just be scrolling around through Facebook, looking for anything that was going on in San Francisco at that time. And one of the first things that popped up was fur protest that was going on. And so I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. That might be, you know, something to check out. Maybe I'll swing by there. And I did. And there was a lot of people there. I was actually surprised at how big of a crowd they got. But when I'm going to different things like that, or if I come across something like that, I'm not imposing, or I'm not expressing any of my own personal beliefs about anything that is going on, right? Mm-hmm. When I go and shoot photos of something like that, be it a protest or whatever, I'm there to take photos and just document what's going on. And I'm neutral, right? I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have an opinion about what's going on either way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important if you're trying to document what's going on, right? Because if you document from a perspective of like, well, these people are wrong in whatever it is that they believe, you're going to photograph it in that way. Mm-hmm. You're going to photograph them to make them, whether you're conscious of it or not, you're going to have that point of view through your lens. So I try to impose as little as possible of my own personal beliefs, whatever it is that's going on. I might not agree with what it is that they're talking about, but I'm not there to get into a discussion or debate with with whoever's out there. Mm-hmm. I'm just there to take photos and try and make some good photos. Right.
But what if someone is highly opposed, the opposite of your point of view? What if someone actually really, let's say you're part of a specific group and there's a protest against your specific group. You think you could still be sort of an empty vessel and document without imposing your point of view?
Do you mean if I was already there, if I'm a part of the protest, or
no, like let's say they're protesting, let's say you're from X group, and uh-huh. Y group is protesting against X group. Mm-hmm. Are you still able to document this protesting against your group in such a non-judgmental manner?
From a neutral perspective,
right?
Yeah, I That's my goal. That's always okay. My goal is I'm not trying to express my own personal beliefs in anything that I'm documenting or photographing.
Right.
I'm there to document the event, whatever the event may be, and show the photos, and that's it. You know, and then I mean, even in the time, like the one we talked about with the Sudanese Americans.
Right.
I just happened to come across it, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And I, you know, I went and looked it up afterwards, because one of the guys that was in the crowd that was talking to me, he kind of told me why they were there and what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got interested. I wanted to look it up and see what was going on and why it was that they were protesting. So, some people will say that your mere presence with a camera is going to influence the way that the crowd reacts. Right. But that's why I sit back and I just observe for a while before I start taking any photos. Right. Because again, like if you study human behavior at all or cognitive human behavior, it'll make it a little bit easier for you to kind of figure out where you need to be in the group or in the crowd or on the street in order to get a good photo, because you can kind of predict how things are going to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with that, I mean, I still try to impose as little as possible as in my presence of being there, right? Which is why I like shooting with the Leica, because they're small, they're kind of compact. You know, people react differently when you show up with, you know, your digital SLR, you know, with the 24-70 or your 70-200 or whatever the case might be, right? And it's like,
right,
oh, the news is here, you know, it's like, you know, let's get loud or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to react a little bit different that way.
Right.
So like I said, I try to be neutral. I try and impose as little as possible. I try to be the gray man. I don't know if you've ever heard that term,
no.
But I try to be the gray man in the crowd.
So just neutral, Mr. Neutral, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. Have you heard that term before? Gray man?
No, actually I haven't. No.
So it's kind of a, It's an old term. It's been around for a while, but basically, the gray man would be there would be nothing significant about me that you would be able to remember. Like if I was standing next to you with my camera, and then I disappeared, and somebody said, "Hey, can you describe to me who that was that was just standing next to you?" Mm-hmm. You'd be like, I don't know. I don't remember what he looked like or what anything like that. Right. So you try and impose as little as possible in the scene so that it remains neutral.
That's pretty cool. Nice. So Daniel Alvarez, the gray man. That's the movie.
I try. It doesn't always work because sometimes people will be like, "Hey, what are you doing with that camera?" Blah, yeah. Blah, blah. But you know, that's always a good thing is, you know, you keep your head on a swivel, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
Because you never know with protests, right? Sometimes they can get crazy and people start throwing stuff or start attacking people.
Right.
So you keep your head on a swivel for that, but you're also keeping your head on a swivel for photos and you just try and be quiet and just observe, right? And try and make some good photos.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you could also use the Winogrand technique of pretending like your camera's broken.
Yeah. I mean, that worked so well for him. He would be, you know, standing next to somebody on a corner and it looks like he's fidgeting, like, "Oh, I think my camera's broken." But in reality, you know, he just made like six frames and he had no idea.
Right, yeah. Actually, did you hear the last episode when I discussed Saul Leiter?
I did, yeah. Yeah. I love his work. Did you watch the movie, by the way?
Oh, gosh. I just watched it. Oh, my goodness.
Man, that is amazing.
Yeah. It's going to be on repeat because that just... such a humble person.
Right, right.
Like, unbelievable. You know, like, if anyone has ever watched Winogrand's interviews, like, not humble.
Yeah, he's pretty... I don't want to call him aggressive, but he was very like in your face.
Yes.
With a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And lighter was the opposite of that. Like just it's just I mean that, you know, like, you know, there's certain people that you would have loved to have met. This is a person I would have loved to have met.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Just, yeah. But you could also use his technique of 150 millimeter and just... Have you ever done that, actually? Done a sort of long lens of far away and capturing, you know, the moment, but also no. not being within the scene itself?
No. I mean, no. Because with the exception of the sports photography stuff,
yeah.
I have a 35 millimeter lens and that's it. I have a hard time. I mean, not to take anything away from Saul Leiter, because his work is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that he did it, the colors, the content, it is amazing all the way around. But for me, I have a hard time photographing anything from afar.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I need to be as close as possible to whatever it is that I'm photographing to have that intimacy with it.
Okay.
So I couldn't, I think if I tried to do something like that, I would fail terribly, because I just don't know how. I can't, my mind doesn't see like he did, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that for me, that's another reason why I really appreciate his work.
His work. Yeah.
Because I have such a hard time comprehending how he was able to take some of those photos.
Yeah, just beautiful. You know, I've tried the 35 millimeter is definitely my lens of choice for most things, but yeah. when I'm out there doing street photography, it doesn't work for me as much as something like maybe something longer, like, you know, 85 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe because I'm a shy person, mm-hmm. but also I really do fear rejection. You know, and I know you're saying if someone says no, well, that's it. But just to get to the no, like I don't yeah. even want to get to the no. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that is holding you back from that? Because now I'm kind of curious what your thought process is.
Huh? You know, the thing is that here in Florida, I'm like in the United States, I'm a foreigner. And I feel uh-huh. I feel like a foreigner. Like when I'm in the Netherlands, even though I don't live there, but Dutch is my first language, and my mm-hmm. most of my family lives in the Netherlands. I'm actually able to shoot with my 35 a little bit more effectively than I am here in South Florida. And I think here, and I don't know how it is in where you are, but here people can be kind of aggressive,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are from New York. Mm-hmm. Or have descendants, you know, they're descendants of New Yorkers. So I don't right. know if that's a thing, if that's why they're more aggressive. But that's kind of, you know, where my wall goes up a little bit, because I'm just, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit scared, I should say.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of interesting. But so what I'm hearing is that it's a comfort level, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're comfortable being up close and personal with people in the Netherlands,
right?
Because that's what you know,
right?
But I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice
mm-hmm.
by not getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I
because
you know what?
Because
I
it agree. Could be, that could be the thing that sparks your photography in general,
mm.
right? If it's trying something new. I mean, you could fail miserably, right? Just right. as an example, but you don't know what the outcome is going to be because you're not willing to try it,
right?
Because you're stuck in that comfort zone, right?
Yeah,
which is box. You know, that's why when people come to me and they say, hey, would you be interested in shooting blah blah blah, or would you be interested in helping me out with whatever, I mm-hmm. almost never say no unless I absolutely really can't, you know, do it. I try not to say no to any new experiences or any new opportunities to photograph something or whatever. Like I'll give you a perfect example. The very first time that I went out on to do a sporting event, it was with a friend of mine. His name is Marcio Sanchez. He's an associate press photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, amazing photography, right? That's another guy. If you look him up, his photos are amazing. He's one of the first guys that got Do you remember when Colin Kaepernick, the football player for the 49ers, was doing the kneeling thing?
Right.
He was one of the first people to get a photo of him
doing it,
kneeling.
Okay.
And then it was like after that, like the whole kneeling thing blew up, right? But it was it was like him and a handful of other guys that really got a good photo of that. So anyway, the very first time that I went out, I did a football game with him, and all I did for the game was carry his bag and carry one of his lenses. Mm. I didn't shoot anything. I didn't, like, that was it. That's all I did. And I know a lot of people came to me after and they're like, why would you do that? Why would you like be like a pack mule basically for another photographer? But for me, it was because I saw that as an opportunity to get to know other photographers, get to experience something new, and possibly get me to the point where I could do it regularly, or learn something from my friend Marcio, or learn something from some of the other guys. And from that one experience, right, that one event, I've met so many other photographers, right, that work with Associated Press or work for other agencies, and it's opened me up to a far wider range of people, right? Mm-hmm. So like people that I'm friends with now.
Yeah.
And it's allowed me to go out and do stuff with them and make photographs of different sporting events. If I wouldn't have taken that up, I would have never gotten to the point where I am now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just jumping on an opportunity and you know, just going out and doing it. And
yeah.
That's why I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice by not getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, like I have been invited now to a couple of weddings, and actually I'm probably gonna go shoot a wedding with one of my coworkers. Mm-hmm. But my cousin underscored through Jen's eyes, Janine Swaby, she invited me to go shoot a wedding with her in the past, and I was basically a pack mule, and it was a great experience.
Right.
But I'm not so sure if I could get out of the... I mean, you know, Stu, the photographer who invited me to come with him now, he's telling me to come get out of my comfort zone, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. The thing is that, like I said last week or 2 weeks ago when we spoke last, weddings, just like getting out of that 150 millimeter range for my street photography,
yeah,
are extremely nerve-wracking. The same thing with actually public speaking. I mean, yeah, I'm doing a podcast. I actually started podcasting because I wanted to get over that fear. And
yeah,
this proves exactly what you're saying.
Right.
But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm actually going to go... I'm going to take a 35 with me. And actually, I'm going to take a 28 with me and go do street photography.
There you go. I mean, like
check
I said,
with me next week.
Yeah, what's the worst that can happen? You know what I mean? You know, somebody tells you, hey, don't take my photo.
Yeah.
Okay, keep walking. We'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. If someone tells you they don't want you to take their photo and delete it, do you delete? Well, I mean, not with your film cameras, but I mean, with your digital cameras.
To be honest with you, I've never had somebody tell me to delete a photo.
Would you?
I don't think that I would.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
How would you diffuse the situation?
Well, you know, the first and foremost, you need to make sure that you're not in the wrong, right?
I mean, right.
You know, you're in a public place where you're allowed to be taking photos of things that are open to the public, right? So you're not like sneaking around doing anything, you know, breaking into anywhere or, you know, something like that. As long as you're within your legal rights, that's really all that you need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, I guess I would kind of explain that, and then just, you know, if they're not happy with that, I just, you know, okay, well, sorry, you know, and I keep moving.
Yeah, all right, you know, I'll check in and I'll let you know how that went.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'll be bugging you for sure. I'm gonna want to know how it went.
I'm not sure if I'll be posting it. I don't post that much on Instagram lately, but maybe I will post those pictures, because I think the best street photography stuff I've done has been in Amsterdam. But then again, Florida is not like New York or any other city. It's really, there aren't any places where there are a lot of people just always walking. It's a driving state, basically.
Right. Well, but I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't make something out of it, right? You don't have to travel to somewhere exotic or to go to another state or anything like that. I mean,
right.
You know, you could photograph your neighborhood and, you know, like I said earlier, you know, find some good light, you know, find a good composition, something that's interesting. It doesn't have to have people in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could still make some good work. You know, look at Lee Friedlander did a whole series of stuff where he was shooting photos from
the car.
Inside of his car.
I love that.
You know? So, I mean, you could still put a body of work together. You just have to think outside of the box a little, you know?
Yeah. So my friend Bart Buschatz, who does he does Let's Talk Photography. I was actually I'm gonna be on his March episode. He actually had an episode a while back about projects, and I think he defines projects for him. Projects are something that he lays it out ahead of time, and tries to have an end goal for them. Do you do the same thing, or do you also go back to images and define a project based on something that has already been done?
Well, I mean, you know, in reality, any project, you know, that I might do now has probably been done by somebody and probably done better. So, you know, like the rodeo stuff, Gary Winogrand had done rodeo stuff before, right? And he did it very well. You know, the footballer stuff on the sidelines. I mean, he's got some photos of stuff like that. So, I think it's hard to find something, a new topic or a new project, something brand new that nobody's ever done before.
Well, not necessarily brand new. What I mean is that sort of setting your project before you start doing it, in terms of like, okay, I'm going to shoot my son for a year, instead of saying, I've shot my son now for 6 months, and oh, you know, this is a project. I'm going to make this my project, and then continue shooting it and say, this is the project.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, I definitely do it beforehand.
Okay.
And I'll, like I said, I'll figure something out. Or the perfect example was when we found out we were going to have my son, right? So as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, well, that's going to be, you know, the 9 months is going to be a project in by itself, right? And then the first year, that's going to be a project in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually know if there's something that I'm interested in that I want to make a project, I lay it out beforehand. But there have been times where I was shooting photos and I started seeing sort of a pattern. I said, "Oh, this could become a project." And a perfect example of that is the, you know, the sideline stuff. Because I didn't do that with the intention of saying, "Oh, I'm going to put together a little body of work from the sidelines." I just did it because I always take my Leica with me wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I shared some of those photos with a buddy of mine who lives in Lebanon. He was in town. His name's Fadi, and I showed him some of the photos, and he was like, "Man, these are really good. I could see this becoming like a little project, a little body of work." And it wasn't until he said that I realized it. So that's an example, or that's a good example of going into something and not really having those intentions, but it kind of developed into that.
Right. Right. Okay. So basically, you're not opposed to, you're saying that both ways are effective ways of doing projects.
Yeah. And like I said, if it's something that I know beforehand, or something that I've been thinking about or whatever, then yes, I'm going to try and lay it out beforehand and say, this is going to be 6 months or 9 months, a year, or whatever the case is, and then sort of focus on it that way. And then, I mean, you know, when I go out to shoot street photography, I don't go out with the intention of like, I'm going to shoot everything that I see that's yellow, for an example.
Yeah. Right?
I don't do that. I just go out and I'm trying to find something interesting, something that's, you know, explaining what's going on this day, you know, and just take photos.
Yeah.
But, you know, you start going back and you look at stuff and you'll see patterns, or you'll start to see things that kind of develop just based off of your eye and what you're drawn to. Then you can start to say, oh, this is interesting. I like this pattern that I'm starting to see here. And then you'll start collecting those photos and put them together and setting them aside and saying, maybe this will be a project, or this will become something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it looks like we've been probably recording about an hour. Anything that you want to give the listeners before we wrap it up? Anything that perhaps some sort of wisdom or something for the listeners to think about?
No, I mean, you know, go buy some books, yes. or get yes. some magazines or something.
Yes, I would agree with that. How often do you sit actually before we go with a book of an artist you appreciate? Like, how is this something, you know, is this a, you know, Sunday morning drinking coffee thing, or is this a, you know, daily thing?
Yeah, usually on the, you know, Sundays are usually my relaxed day. I try and not do too much mm-hmm. on Sundays. So yeah, Sunday, like a Sunday morning coffee with a book, that sort of stuff. Cause I tend to not watch the news too much. So I'll sit down and go over a photo book, or something, or maybe, you know, read a couple pages in a book that I'm reading, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Yeah. So just, like I mentioned the last time, you know, stay off the gear forums,
yes.
Focus on the content of your work,
right?
You know, and go buy some books and study photography.
Good advice. Any book that you would like the listeners to go check out that you're actually enjoying a lot now?
I recently bought Lindsay Addario's Of Love and War.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good work. Very inspirational. You know, if you're looking at wanting to start a project. Some of the work that she's done is absolutely amazing. And her story is equally as amazing. I don't know.
Might be more.
Yeah. I don't know how familiar you are with her, but
yeah,
she,
I am familiar.
Her story alone is very interesting. So
yes. Yes. Very true. She actually, I don't know if you heard She Does podcast. Have you ever listened to that podcast?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, she was on episode 34, like in December of 2017.
Okay.
And it's well worth listening to.
Yeah, I'll have to go look it up.
It's A Degree of Hunger, Lindsay Addario.
Hmm.
So yeah, definitely get that, you know, I'm definitely, that book is, you know, you told me about it earlier. That book is on my list for sure. I'm picking it up next and go listen to that podcast.
Cool.
Alrighty. So tell all the listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, my website is Daniel Alvarez with a Z at the end, photos, and that's FOTOS.com. And I'm on Instagram at Mr. Misfit 06.
Yes, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely.
And thanks for being a good Insta friend.
Yeah, no worries, man. I appreciate you having me on again. I got a lot of good feedback from the first one. So
yeah, same here.
You know, I appreciate you having me on again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for you know, giving of your time.
Sure.
I really want to thank Daniel Alvarez for coming on. I really appreciate him giving up his time. I tried a few different things with this episode. The conversation was really good. The intro and outro music for this show has always been by Andy G. Cohen, and the link to his music is in the show notes. I also tried to use some sort of bed music in some of the episode, and that music is done by Kai Engel. That music is called Behind Your Window. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening.